Real quick here, Quantum Leap. To me, this was a seminal show. I used to watch it all the time as a kid. The reruns were on, I think, TNT. It was one of the big shows. It was a really fun show, really compelling. The Scott Bakula, I think, is the name of the actor. What was that character's name? Any of you guys know?
I don't remember.
I'll look it up real quick.
I'm wondering if he was like agent. It was Carter Cooper. No, I'm just kidding.
I will know in a second.
Okay.
Sam Beckett is his name.
Sam Beckett. Well, that's already a Samuel Beckett with the comment. Samuel Beckett being the humorist, with the white mustache, who wrote the famous American.
Samuel Beckett of Waiting for Godot.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking of Samuel Clemens. Sorry.
Oh, you mean Mark Twain?
Mark Twain. My bad. Sorry, Samuel Beckett. Pardon me. But real quick about Quantum Leap. Going back to this idea of the iPhone, the flattening of reality, the iPhone is time travel, or the phone is time travel. I don't use an iPhone, so the Android is time travel. I always, ever since the iPhones came out, and as soon as I started seeing people just buried in their phones and always touching their phones, I mean, every show of Quantum Leap, he's tapping into an iPhone-like device as a part of how, the character Sam Beckett time travels. I mean, that's like almost integral. So it's another sync with this idea of technology as time travel. The flat piece of flat technology you can hold in your hand is time travel. You know, and they're even going to use these things. Apparently, there's hologram projectors that are going to come where you just set your phone down and it'll project up a hologram. You can like have Coltrane serenading you, you know, in your apartment. But sorry about that.
No, that's great.
Oh, I'm apologizing now, but I mean, I feel like I'm a little scattered tonight. So sorry about that, guys.
I think we all are scattered. There's just a lot to talk about.
Yeah. It's all good.
One of my favorite, I've only seen a couple episodes of Quantum Leap, but the very beginning one is great for the, there's a little interaction where Al is trying to tell Sam Beckett what's going on because he's forgotten. And there's this little exchange, which is just in a way that when I heard it, I was like, this is the truth about reality, not just the show, but the entire thing in which we are embedded right now. That was my kind of idea at the time. It might sound crazy, but I'm just going to read this little exchange they have. It's funny. On every level, it sort of works metaphorically. So he says, "My name is Albert." "Albert what? I can't tell you because it's restricted. Most of what you're going to want to know is restricted, so it'd be easier if you don't ask questions." And he says, "What are you?" He says, "That's a question." "What's my last name?" And he says, "If you can't remember, I can't tell you." And he says, "It's important." And he says, "But it's also on the top of Ziggy's no-no list. Double star." Which I think is an interesting line because of Ziggy
double
Stardust.
Star
double
too.
Star.
Yeah. I don't remember who Ziggy is, but
Ziggy's the computer that he's typing into. He goes, "Let me see what Ziggy says." He's right. Always typing into Ziggy.
Right.
So that's the iPhone. And now, go ahead. This is blowing my mind.
then he says, "Why?" And he says, "I can't tell you that either." "Well, what the hell can you tell me?" "Well, basically what you already know, that you're part of a time travel experiment that went a little caca." And he says, "A little caca? How little caca?" And he says, "Well, you're here." Which is a biggie. I mean, that's a first. It's Nobel Prize time. You should be proud of that. And we're experiencing technical difficulties in retrieving you." That's great, Al. So, like, that whole exchange seems to me to, like, if you're just thinking about human beings on the Earth right now, I think it's basically true that we're part of a time travel experiment that went a little caca and they're having difficulty bringing us back and we can't remember anything or we can't be told anything that we can't remember ourselves. So it's like we're stuck. I just think kind of.
It's just saying, and it says, you know, what did he say? Only what you know is all is what you're going to know. So it's this idea again, going back to the perceiver as the constructor of reality. And changing in the perception is kind of how the time travel takes place. That right. Andrew Basaggio, and we were talking about earlier. So the other thing is Ziggy Stardust, Starman, the new David Bowie album. It actually, they say Black Star, but it's a symbol of just a star. So there you have Ziggy and Star, with the Bowie connection.
You know, we haven't talked since then. And does anybody know if, I mean, I think it's kind of given away that I think the answer is yes, but did David Bowie, record it or, is he in the new Twin Peaks? Do we know if he filmed, his role, his reprisal? And
I don't think so, but I don't know.
But what was it? Wasn't there one clip that I sent you guys where it was new?
Yeah, I think that is from the
old one.
The old one, the blue, the extended. They just came out with like an hour and a half worth of cut footage from that movie.
Okay.
As its own little Blu-ray, it's like the missing pieces, I think, which I still have not watched. But wow. I think that's where it's from, which I really want to see. Yeah. Seems. Important.
What did David Bowie play in the original series? I mean, what was his character?
Well, he was only in the movie Fire Walk With Me, and he played another FBI agent who, like, he disappears, and...
His retrieval got messed up.
His retrieval got messed up, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he comes back, there's this great scene where he reappears in the FBI building in front of Agent Cooper and David Lynch's character. And he's telling them about the Black Lodge and what he saw there. He's like, I've been to their meetings. We live inside a dream and all this other stuff. It's a really weird, freaky scene.
Yeah, it's really great. That's some good stuff right there.
But yeah, I mean, it's totally fitting of David Bowie being something other than, I don't know.
Yeah,
an odd piece of the puzzle.
Going back to 47 as the roots for Bowie, right? It's just strange to me. Roswell, then you have Bowie, who's the man who fell to Earth, Starman, you know, basically, AKA I'm an alien or I'm a time travel entity or whatever. You have Crowley dying in that year, but Crowley is famous for, he went into a trance when he was living in New York City, I think in the teens. This is around the same time he was working as an agent for the British government, writing German propaganda to convince the American public to go enter into World War I. But he conjured up this entity he says visited him called LAM, L-A-M. And it's just this uncanny sketch of a gray alien. I mean, you can just type it in, Crowley Lamb into Google, L-A-M. And so again, you have, he's dying in 47, but he was sort of the creator in a way, or at least he had a precursor image of what we come to know as gray aliens, which I guess the 47 date, don't they say Roswell or grays, often they're depicted as grays. When they had like the dead body from their, like even in X-Files, he comes to that dead body in the first episode and it's basically a gray with that shape of the kind of the bigger head. But then you have Bowie in 47, he becomes the alien. So, you know, something clearly happened, whether it's in the unconscious or the collective or like a government program to create this, reality tunnel for the collective of aliens and visitation, et cetera. Something happened there that shifted everything. And it's, anyhow.
And as we know, James Franco is a big Crowley guy. I don't know what you call him, but he, go ahead, Dennis.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's an enigmatic. I don't really know.
I think we talked about it the last time that him and Kenneth Anger did a filmed Crowley ritual, but then he also played the Wizard of Oz in the recent Wizard of Oz movie. He was Oz, which is Crowley's big thing. I don't know much about it, but
Bieber Oz, yeah,
right. Strength, and here he is in time traveling in a TV show written by a guy born in 1947.
Well, when it connects to the Kubrick, because it hit me in our email, it was like Stephen King, and then I remembered, oh, fuck, The Shining. I mean, that's Stephen King. So King seems to be highly important, I mean, at least culturally at a surface level, but then also this whole subtext of, like, we've been describing in these shows. I mean, King seems to be part of the part of the system, you know.
Oh yeah, SK, you know, Stanley Kubrick, Stephen King, JFK being the King kill ritual. Stephen King, as I mean, he's a guy that's known for his prolific output, I guess, and like spinner of worlds. You know, he's he is a creator. And he's the king. What can you say?
Anyway. Hey guys, I'll be back in 2 minutes. 1 second, sorry.
It's so weird that he says I'll be back in 2 minutes.
It is, isn't it?
Oh, you did that on purpose. Okay, good. Well, it's funny.
Yes, I actually didn't. I didn't, but I had just been thinking about that, so I maybe I did it and not thinking, but yes, I did.
Well, because, well, I don't know, real quick about 2 minutes is because I think of Tommy Wiseau. Have you seen The Room, SJ?
Is that the new movie that just came out?
No, it's kind of a cult movie that's renowned for how bad it is. People go to see it and midnight showings. And
Franco's actually making a movie about the movie.
Yes, he is. That's right. I totally forgot about that. But Tommy Wiseau, the guy who made that movie, is such a freak. And on one of the Tim and Eric episodes that he's in, he keeps repeatedly just leaving the set. And he says, I'll be back in 2 minutes. And he just leaves. And he'll come back. And he's like supposed to be with his girlfriend. And they're in this character that he just keeps getting, I'll be back in 2 minutes. And he leaves and he comes back. Sticks around for a second. He's like, I gotta go. I'll be back in 2 minutes. So it's this running thing. And then I think in Hail Caesar, there was something about 2 minutes. This idea of two, I don't know. It's a lot to extrapolate from something so, mundane. But of course, 2 minutes. I'll be back in 2 minutes. 11:22. And so Tommy Wiseau, people think like, oh, he's an alien or something because he's just so weird. Maybe he's from the future or the past.
Yeah.
Or neither. I don't know. But it all connects, man.
Well, no, it's a common phrase. I'm thinking about it more now, too. I mean, it's something, it's like a colloquial phrase. It just means I'll be right back. It's I'll be back in 2 minutes or, you know, I mean, I hear that kind of just around my hood and things like that. I mean, my whole life. So the fact that that is the time they've chosen is a, interesting too, because it's kind of like what everybody just says, I'll be right back, or, you know, will you? You will be right back, but you'll be different. You know, you're not going to be you, you know, so you won't be right back. What was the other thing I wanted to say? Oh shit. I can't remember now, but, yeah, man, it's wild. Tommy Wiseau. How do you, that's like Wizard. I was just thinking about Tommy Wizard, but you saw Hail Caesar. What was the group that hijacked him? Were they really from the future in the movie?
Well, no, they were. They're actually communists, like a Hollywood communist, a group of writers, Hollywood writers that were disaffected, disgruntled because they were felt of unfair treatment by the capitalist pigs of the studio system, and they are working with Mother Russia to, you know, bring the glorious socialism to us all. But there's these philosophical discussions about where they talk about Marx and how the dialectic of history and creating the future. And so that's what they mean when they say they're from the future, because they believe that they're from, like, ideologically from the future, because they are building the future. And then, so I thought, I mean, that has huge implications because they're writers. And so, particularly in Hollywood, so they're writing all these movies, and by writing the movies, they're creating the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's basically what you were going to ask them about it, SJ, or was it?
No, I was just curious, because that was the thing that intrigued me the most, was this idea that there may have been like a group. When I saw the trailer, I was thinking, is this like the same type of group that's in Being John Malkovich, where they're from, they're kind of trying to use human bodies to travel, basically?
Yeah, it's, I really wanted the movie to get that weird. It never did. But it's slightly similar.
Well, and maybe even more tangible and realistic and palatable by the masses. You know, I think most people can get on board with the idea of art creation as changing the future, as even some artists talk about living forever through their work. So, like, that's this idea of, like, everybody's trying to live forever through their creativity. And you see people like Sophocles, you know, he's lived a long time, you know, or Plato. I mean, they've lived quite a while just through their creation and through putting words on paper. So, I've always thought the written word is kind of the most powerful, one of the most powerful things, and things that has the most longevity. The idea that pen is mightier than the sword, in a way. And what's the other, an idea whose time has come is, you know, there's that phrase that sort of, you can't step in the way of an idea whose time has come. And so, you know, I think it relates to Crowley in the sense of will, as being a powerful force. You know, I mean, this notion of conjuring, even, I was just saying conjuring, like writing. I was reading again, someone was talking about how he doesn't even remember. Oh, Alejandro Jodorowsky. I was watching a interview with him and the LSD advocate, or the ayahuasca advocate. I forgot his name. He's kind of the modern day Leary. He has Daniel that whole site.
Daniel Pinchak.
Pinchak.
And Jodorowsky said,
a train ramp.
Yeah, well, this was like a conference. So there's a video of them that Znor was talking about on an Always Record. I went and watched all that too. That was awesome, by the way, where it's a little documentary. Jodorowsky meets Pinchbeck, and Pinchbeck goes to Paris and hangs out with Jodorowsky, and he does a tarot reading for him. And it's just so clear that, like, Pinchbeck's way out of his league in terms of, like, the depth and the wisdom that Jodorowsky has. I mean, Pinchbeck's, it's almost like he can't even, he just gets washed out, you know, he comes off looking really, really bad. But this was a talk in New York where he was answering some questions, and Jodorowsky says, I don't even remember writing the book. He's sitting here reading this book. And like, fuck, I wrote that? I'm learning from the book I wrote. I'm getting wisdom from it. You know, I know what I wrote. So, you know, anyhow, this idea may be changing the future through channeling. I think it can go both ways. That there's other, you know, whatever's being channeled in the creative process is actually a something that is being given to humanity as a way to change the stream of the human future, kind of idea.
Yeah.
That's for a different time.
Okay. All right.
For the post game.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say? Well, I was thinking the channeling, the ideas of writing, etc., and then the idea that the whole Julian Jaynes bicameral mind idea, that long ago human beings basically the two hemispheres were joined, maybe one of you guys knows this better, but that they didn't have, like, ego the way we do now. And so the voice that we all hear in our heads wasn't there. It was like totally integrated. And then that broke down. Am I getting this right? Do you guys know?
I think so.
Man, I should know, but I don't.
Well, anyway, at some point, like...
Ha!
What?
No, sorry.
What was that?
I just laughed at myself.
Oh, okay. Okay. that human beings started... What they heard... What we hear is the ego they thought was God. Like... talking to them or something like that. And so when we kind of let that guard down and we can listen to what's coming in through the head, like that's what they heard.
That's so funny that you went there because I was imagining a scenario where AI replaces ego voice and that the outside voice that they heard before the mind severed was AI itself, like outside of the membrane. I don't know. I just was curious where you went and where I was going in my head.
I think that sounds like something similar. AI voice. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Oh, I don't know. That it hadn't penetrated the collective sense of collectiveness at that point, and therefore it was exterior and it was believed to be a god. And since then, it has melded with the gods, or it's, shit. I don't know. I'm out of my zone.
I think we all, I am too. I'm talking about a book I've not read. I was going to make the sort of, comment, funny haha comment, that would conveniently segue into a discussion of the X-Files by saying that, do you think that Agent Carter, Chris Carter, chose the name Will for Mulder and Scully's child because it symbolizes the will?
Dude, that's so funny. Because just before this talk, I was thinking, my brother's name is William, and I was just sitting here in my kitchen and just thinking, William, Will I am, you know, and like even Will, that rapper, Will.i.m. And it's like the train of thought I was in was like this idea of like a name as a sigil and the powers of the name of a name and how, you know, why do certain names exist? You know, I guess in this Scotch English tradition, you know, William the Conqueror, is the most famous, you know, the first king of England. You know, and Stevens, the second king, that's my name. So I guess my dad was on some kind of masculine trip when he named us. But, you know, anyhow, it makes total sense to me. Yeah, William Shakespeare. There it is. I am the will. I am, you know, I have conjured the will and now I'm going to unleash it onto the world. You know, I think whether Chris Carter chose that intentionally, I'm sure he had his reasons for choosing it.
Or whoever
but, did. Or if the, it was it the Pentagon's conglomerate.
Just a very obvious, bit of like, it just kind of heavy handed symbolism, which I found this whole season to be.
Yeah.
I guess if you've only got 6 episodes to work with, you can get your shit in. But
oh, really? That's only 6 episodes. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So the last one's next week, which will be the the second part of the first episode, so it'll be go back to the Roswell government stuff instead of.
Man, he only got 6 episodes?
Yeah, or only wanted 6 episodes.
Dang. I think
they're talking about maybe like repeating that and doing 6 episodes and then 6 more and then 6 more. 666. But, yeah. I think it's just because Duchovny and Gillian Anderson didn't want to commit too deeply at a time. But, But yeah.
And they set up their, if they don't want to do any more shows, they've got now a built-in new agent to just take over the show.
Which
the
Bizarro,
Bizarro, yeah.
Yeah, the Bizarro.
I haven't seen that episode yet, but I was funny that you guys had that to point out about it, or that's a part of it.
Well, I'll just say real quick about the X-Files. I had never seen any of the previous shows. It's just something I totally missed. It wasn't ever on my radar. And
wow.
So this is my first experience with any X-Files related anything.
That's kind of
and well, I know. I mean, I've been a huge conspiracy theorist basically my whole life, you know. And so yeah, it is strange, you know, I didn't ever listen to it. I was more into Art Bell, you know. And that was kind of that's the altar that I worshiped at in my youth, you know, my conspiracy altar.
We're watching the old X-Files as literal, like, I didn't watch a lot of them either, or at least not under the same type of viewing expectation. But were they equally conspiratorial or literally conspiratorial? Because this is like almost like, the thing about these is that they're so directly parroting, and like, I hope he like donated a lot to his participation at watching the Secret Space Program stuff, because like there's some stuff it's like directly written from that. Were they like that?
You mean the original episodes?
Yeah, were they
so heavy-handed?
Or just what was you watched them, so I take it a fair amount of them, so like did you have that feeling back then, or?
Not at all, really. I mean, it's much more, at least the first, you know, the beginnings.
Yeah, first
much
one.
Much subtle. It was more kind of, I don't want to say metaphorical, but, like, it was just, it wasn't so expositional, you know? I think you could just go and watch the pilot, the very first episode. I think that contains pretty much all of it, like compressed. I mean, like, it's just very much about, well, it's first of all, it's the 90s, so it's very much like unsolved mysteries, UFOs, little green men, kind of idea, but it doesn't ever really became like too cheesy, like in the beginning, I mean. Not speaking for the later season. It was always very respectful. It wasn't just making fun of it, you know? It was a show about a guy who was asking serious questions and felt that he was being lied to, which is how lots of people feel. And so it was kind of universally human in that way. And then you had Scully, who's the perfect foil because of the skepticism and open-minded. But, like there's a scene in the very first episode where the first time they meet, and Scully comes in and she's just the scientist, doesn't know what to expect. She's there to debunk him, basically. And he's basically just starts talking to her, and he's like, well, let me show you something. And she starts going off on her with her scientific knowledge of what she knows to be true. And then he puts this thing up on the board, which is like a substance that was taken out of the wound of some victim. And she sees it, and it's a great piece of acting because like her eyes widen, and she's like, you could just tell in her face, like, I've never seen anything like this before. And she's immediately curious. She doesn't like dismiss it or anything. So yeah, it was much more subtle and I don't know what other words to use. It wasn't whatever's going on now. But he did, like Erica told me how her dad and Ken Thomas and all those guys in the 90s were like watching X-Files and be like, wow, they just kind of took that.
Yeah.
Our newsletter or the, like, wow. I think in the Lone Gunman series that everybody talks about how it predicted 9/11, they talk a lot about like the whole Promise software.
Wow.
Which is pretty direct. So I think he's always had a tendency to just kind of, you know, pluck things and just get away with it.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying. I'm not.
Oh yeah, it is. It's kind of annoying. I like to think that it just goes back to the probably what we've discussed already about the competing agendas of television. Like,
yeah.
On one hand, it's bringing things to people's attention. On the other hand, it's a way to get people to dismiss those things. So, I don't know. So on the one hand, we have them talking about alien reproduction vehicles. And on the other hand, we have people hearing that and going, ha ha ha, what a crazy idea. I don't know.
That was pretty hardcore to be in, to see in mainstream TV, but.
Yeah. Do we want
to?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, part of my reaction to it was, yeah, it's just like we were talking about earlier about 11/22/63. I think we were talking about it in this context, but of just kind of reappropriating some of the conspiracy ideas and discourse and then sort of recasting it for a profit, sell ads around it. And I've just seen this as a real, so I was thinking about this also earlier. You know, it's gone mainstream. And, even with things like the Donald Trump candidacy. I mean, he's come out like this week. There's been all this news of Donald Trump's a truther. And I read that, apparently architects and engineers of 9/11 sent their DVDs and information to every candidate. And Trump's campaign was the only one that sent him back a letter and it said, thank you for this information. We're going to take a look at it. We'll examine it. You know, that he's now questioned, at least kind of alluded to like Bush as being responsible for 9/11, maybe not like, in the way of him planning and executing it, but more of like he just let his guard down or something like that. But anyhow, I think it's a sellable commodity now, this conspiracy discourse, because it's so popular, it's proliferated. I mean, and so if you can figure out a way to package that and sell that commodity and attach it to your whatever you're writing and selling, I mean, it's a really, you know, you're going to strike gold. And you know, that was one of my big first reactions. It just felt like that first episode, it was a lot of the conspiracy theories were just kind of thrown together, in a way, you know, and given lip service to. And I enjoyed it, but,
Well, it's interesting because it's up for debate if Trump is actually spending any of his own money, because I've heard it proposed that he's actually being given all this airtime because for exactly what you just said, SJ, is that it's a selling thing, you know, and, it's a tool for, you can package and sell around this.
But who's paying for it, do you think? Or have you heard? I mean, because obviously we've all heard everything, every theory. But
this is a really poor site to say as your source. But Andrew Bastiago said he had been talking with the Democratic Party representative, some person who said that. I think maybe Andrew was saying that he had just been spending all of his own money, but then well, to cite another horrible source, Alfred Labrador, whatever,
that was CIA.
It all for free because it's ratings oriented. But I don't know. Two horribly unreliable sources.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
That research.
I'll go back to my CIA den. No.
It's mainstream, Dennis, the idea that he's getting ads for free. I mean, even just the covering him, allowing him in is free advertising. I mean, he's not having to pay to get on those debates. I think that the more mainstream explanation that I've heard around this is like he's using the debates as his main way to get in front of people.
Uh-huh.
And not only that, but all the interviews he does on MSNBC, Fox News, I mean, all of the networks, they love having him on because their ratings,
yeah, right,
not only on live TV, but also on the internet clips that they shell out. I mean, everybody loves Trump. I mean, he's tapped into something, which is the other interesting thing I've, like, this last couple of weeks.
Well, have you seen?
Let me just put this another way. They can't afford not to,
yeah,
to interview him. Because they need the eyes of the viewers to sell advertising. So anyhow,
yeah.
Go ahead, Alex. What were you saying?
Just, have you, I guess, seen recently what he's been? Particularly, he's been just going after Jeb Bush, just really hard, to the point that it's almost hard to watch. Like, there's a video that I saw that was just like sort of a mashup of it, which was it looked like a Tim and Eric sketch. Like, he's literally impersonating Tim Heidecker, impersonating himself. It's bizarre and funny, very funny. But I mean, Jeb Bush is up there. He's trying to be, seems like he's really actually thinks he's going to be president, or like that he should be. And he's just being, because the line that keeps, that was being repeated is Trump. He's just like, Jeb is a waste. And Jeb is a mess. And Jeb is a big, fat mistake. That's what he says. Just keeps saying things like that. And just really just, like schoolyard bully, just making fun of the guy. Just not even not trying to couch anything in politically correct behavior, like, I respect my candidate or whatever. No, he doesn't. He's just saying you're a fucking idiot. Like, this guy is an idiot. Look how stupid he looks. Like, he looks stupid. Like, what a pussy, you know? Like, how, I mean, what does George H.W. Bush think of that? Like, you know, is Trump taking away from the entrenched establishment candidates that we have all known and loved over the past 40 years, the Bushes, Clintons, all these people.
Rubio. I'm sorry.
Sure. Is he doing that so that Hillary can just win? Or what? Like, what is going on?
I don't know. I haven't watched it. I really don't know. The most political information I got in the last week was from a guy who claims to have been a time traveler to Mars. So, you know.
Right. Point taken.
Yeah.
Well, this angle of you know, we were talking earlier about the collective reality and sort of the line between the self and then the reality on the outside of the self, and the idea that, alien visitation very well may be some kind of manifestation of an inner collective reality shift. It's not necessarily even anything that's been visited. It's more of like the hologram that we're all part of the battery for its projection. You know, because we've changed the filter on the hologram, and now we're seeing ETs as a result. And just as a side note, one of Kirk Hardesty's videos I watched when we were preparing for our talk, I thought it was a nice compromise between this whole flat earth theory debate versus, I guess, round earth fact, you know, quote unquote fact. And I don't have a horse in that fight. I've not studied that at all. But Kirk was saying, there may be some other, like, three or four or five different options, right? Like, there could be some kind of toroidal energy projection that it's not flat around. It's just like this projected hologram.
Yeah.
And so if you're in a projected hologram, then you can do things like alter the filter on a projector through thing. Or if someone, and this is what I'm just going to say about Trump, that, you know, what's fascinating to me is that he's tapped into an energy that's unconscious or semi-conscious of how people feel, you know, and he's speaking to that energy such that he's infallible. I mean, he can do anything and people just like him even more, you know, because it's almost like he's become this archetype that now we're projecting onto. And that's what fascinates me the most about it.
His name is Trump. So you can't forget that pun, that the card, like, that's just too perfect, you know? Like, again, like, this is a thing where you have to, like, the only explanation is time travel to Mars, you know, style thinking. Like, they got this guy, his name is Trump, they are going to use him in the year 2016 as the Trump card to do what? To question mark, I don't know. But, like, it just seems so perfectly arranged that, to the extent that it would have to be go back to when he was given his name, that, like it's no mistake that the past 30 years this guy's been building up his reputation. He's gone to, you know, he's been in wrestling, WWE.
That's crazy.
Shaved Vince McMahon's head and, just this media personality named Trump. And then in 2016, the year of the Trump Tower, the first day of the year, a tower in Dubai gets lit on fire, like the lightning struck tower of the tower card, Trump 16. And then you have Donald Trump running for president. It's all too perfect.
And along those lines, you've got the, there's a lot here, but the David Bowie dying right at the beginning of 2016 and his famous, photograph has the lightning on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And so right there, you have a lightning struck man who then fell to earth and died, you know. The other thing about that is, real quick here, the David Bowie, no one's really talked about this as much. And I think Bowie's a very complex character, so I don't want to hold his past too much against him. People can change and have epiphanies, but, you know, David Bowie was a hardcore fascist.
Yeah.
I mean, in the early 70s, all of his albums were about Nazi style fascism. There's a quote that talks about Himmler's genius. There's from, the album Hunky Dory. I think I forgot the name of the song, but he talks about I'm awash in Crowley's blah, blah, blah. And then in Himmler's wisdom or whatever. But that lightning strike on the face, if you hold that face up next to the British fascist Union flag, that's their symbol. It's a circle with lightning on that left hemisphere. You can just type it in. And so he was even using, you know, an artistic reenactment of this British fascist Union flag. He was all coked up and just wild. And I'm sure he, you know, was, maybe he had other justifications, like this is some kind of theosophical, spiritual thing for me. It's not about murdering people or hard militarism or whatever. But I found that very interesting. And then that final Black Star video, the Lazarus video, he's wearing the garb in one of the shots, it's this garb where he's got like a navy shirt with lines diagonal across it. And that is from the Aladdin Sane, or not the Aladdin Sane, I can't remember the album. It's from 1975. It's called Train, I think. This particular album where that art's taken from, he says it was called it was his most fascist album. It was like the height of that period for him. And the character he played was called the, Thin White Duke. Anyhow, that's the art in Lazarus too. So I'm not sure what he's saying. Like if he's resurrecting the thin white Duke, i.e. Trump 2016 tower, you know, I mean, I don't think that's what Bowie's saying, but just the synchronicity seemed to be pointing that. The man falls to earth, lightning struck tower, lightning on the face, resurrects thin white Duke, Donald Trump sort of militarized fascism. So just to undergird what you're saying there, Alex, these synchronicities seem to be pretty piling up on each other.
Indeed. Of course, it doesn't need to be pointed out, but David Bowie initials DB 42, David Bowman, and we're back to Kubrick. Trump, and then he has, right, yeah, of course, that's Trump Tower. So there's the Tower card, the Tower in Dubai, the Tower Trump. The Trump Tower. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, and the lightning struck. I mean, you know, and this idea of the fascist. Anyhow, it just
yeah.
That the man who fell to earth too. Because if you look at the Trump card, it's got the lightning, and then there's these men falling to earth. I mean, that's like the perfect phrase to describe what's depicted on the card.
Yeah.
Men falling to earth.
And yeah.
So. Hey, I'm very hopeful, man. I think we're living in a,
me too.
You know, like, I don't see what Trump can do. I mean, even if he is elected, it's, I don't feel like he's going to derail anything, honestly. I mean, I think that it's like Jesse Ventura always said when he was elected as the governor of Minnesota. The next day he goes to a room and there's like 100 agents from all kinds of alphabet agencies, you know, and so, you know, and if the reality is if anybody steps out of line, I mean, at least my perception of the 20th century, your brains end up on the sidewalk. So, I mean, it's not like Trump's gonna, it seems like he's right in line or else, you know. But real quick, I wanted to mention too, the idea of the Kennedy assassination, 9/11, which is another lightning struck tower. And then this idea of Trump as a collective archetype that we're projecting onto. But it just fascinated me. I remember when I first heard, I guess, the Jake Kotze and some other people's theories about 9/11, that it was like an inside job. Sure, maybe that's true, but it really was some kind of magical vortex working that's been centuries in the making that we can't even understand what it was. It was so profound in terms of how it affected everything about like the structure of space and time. It was a wormhole. It was a vortex. It was a collective unconscious sort of rupture. And so to me, it seems like that the JFK event may have been a similar event, you know, and that's when what the character says, the more you try to change time, time will snap back at you. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying. I mean, there's this massive black hole of culture and of it that's everything. And you know, I think Trump, my prediction is if he keeps tapping into this archetype, I mean, it's dangerous. It's dangerous for him and for, you know, I think there could be some kind of ritual. It becomes a ripe for a ritual, you know, when you have that many people's focused on that individual, like a John Lennon or something. So, I mean, anyhow, it's like a train that once it's out of the gates, it becomes... it doesn't end well. Anyhow, I'm just kind of riffing here, but.
Well, but that conspiratorial mind makes me believe that he's a pace car for that exact, sentiment, and that the derailing of that, or the just crashing that into a wall. Sorry, Luke Wilson. I didn't mean to bring that up, but, is like, will be like intentionally crushed, to get rid of that. But I don't know. He feels like a pace car to me, but I don't know. I haven't been following anything, so I don't really know.
When you say a pace car, do you mean, someone there, like just keeping everyone busy?
Yeah. And that he will drop off or be dropped out. I don't,
in favor of.
I would be very surprised if he's the Republican Party nominee, just because it just seems so against the tradition of that party, and I don't know.
He could always keep doing what he's doing, get all these people loving him, and then drop out and say I'm gonna be a third party, and then what happens?
Threatened that, right? Hasn't that been a part of his?
Yeah. Seems like that might be part of the end game.
Huh. Wow, that would really... Man, you just see the destruction of the Republican side here. I mean...
Yeah. So, on the other side, what do you guys think about Bernie Sanders? What does Talitha think about Bernie Sanders?
I don't know. Well... Yeah, I don't. We'll ask her.
Okay.
I know.
What do you think?
She thinks, but I don't want to say. I don't have any. I personally don't have many thoughts about it. Other than I feel similarly that he's just a pace car. I don't see these
they're
people
all
being around.
No. Well, they're all, I mean, obviously it's all not real, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing is real. But I just, it's just like, oh, it's Barack Obama all over again. I just see all these people just going hard, heavy, feeling the burn. And I just, I'm just sorry to tell y'all, everybody this, but it's not going to happen. Or it's not going to happen in the way you think. I don't know.
I think Alan said that it had the feeling of a very sort of a redux version of Ron Paul movement.
Right, but with some key differences.
Huge differences, but I know what he's getting at.
Right.
The comparability is insane, is ridiculous from a political standpoint, but
it is similar. But I mean, he's getting too much media attention for it to be Ron Paul, because
exactly
you could clearly see when Ron Paul was running for president that they were doing everything they could to avoid him and not talk about it. Like if I were to in 2012 when Ron Paul was at like his peak popularity. If I were to turn on CNN at any given time, I would never have heard anybody talking about Ron Paul. Ever.
Yeah.
Except for maybe if I had continued to watch it for like a full hour, I might hear one little mention of him or something. But with Bernie, you know, I turn on CNN and there's Bernie. There's Hillary and Bernie. There's people talking about Bernie. Yeah, they kind of are like pay lip service to discrediting him in a way. But I think, you know, that's just the way people think that they're interesting. SJ, you agree?
Well, my thoughts, I mean, I just was thinking about just the first flash of this, but Weekend at Bernie's, isn't that movie The Bernie is a Dead Person?
Yeah.
So I tend to think politicians, especially ones that have had a vote in the Senate, voting for the military industrial complex consistently his whole senatorial career, and that's Bernie.
Yes.
Sorry. He's a burn. He's a dead man walking man, and he's a vassal for the military industrial complex. And that's not just me. I mean, go read like really progressive blogs. I'm talking about true.
Yeah, he's like openly wants to prosecute Snowden and all this stuff. Like,
True liberal progressives, like the real left in this country. People like the Nader, people like, blogs like, Counterpunch. That's sort of one of the biggest blogs. I mean, early on in this campaign, I just typed in, I always go there if I want to get the real dirt on the fake left. And you just type in Bernie Sanders Counterpunch. And it was just detailing his atrocious record on foreign policy. So I have not been a supporter since I read that. I don't vote. So sue me. I come from the Carlin camp. If you vote, then you can't complain. If you don't vote, you actually get to complain. So I want to retain my right to complain. And
yeah, you know. Me too. I complain just right along next to you on that front.
Yep. Yeah. So, but you know, I don't trust him necessarily. Now, I will say some of the he's tapping into some of that same discourse that Trump is. I read the article, Alex, that you posted on Facebook about, I'm sorry, but Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are the same authoritarian candidate or something like that.
Right, right.
But it, yeah, when I read the article, it was kind of a misleading title in a way, but the article, it just goes through like six or seven of the issues and the rhetoric is identical. Trump and Sanders saying exactly the same thing to their audiences. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's tapped into some of that anger, some of that same domestic anger. I do like the rhetoric about kind of, you know, some of the healthcare, you know, stuff. I think he's got some points there. I don't, you know, about socialized medicine or at least having some kind of system. I mean, it's the medical system, well, we can go into that, but it's just so absurd in this country.
Yeah,
I mean, my God. And so, even... you know, I mean, I can't even walk into the doctor's office without getting thousands in bills, you know, even with health insurance. So the fact that they're both addressing it, I like that. But no, I'm not feeling the burn. The other thing about I'm just connecting this too. 2016, feel the burn. The lightning struck Tower. It's on fire.
Yeah.
In the Terra Mersey.
It's the year of the fire monkey. The Chinese year of the fire monkey.
Yes.
Throwing that out there.
So right there, you have another 2016 Tower Trump resonance with Bernie. You know, Dennis, how I think it's going to unfold, I think it's an unknown. I think that the deep state is in waiting for whoever gets elected, whether it's one of their traditional puppets, like a Clinton or a Bush or a Rubio, or if it's a newcomer, like a Trump or a Sanders. Either way, the deep state's going to win, man. I mean, Wall Street and the Pentagon run this country. So
yeah.
I don't have any hope or that change will happen. I'm not doing the whole hope change thing.
So. No. Well, I don't even think, I don't think that the elections are legitimate.
No.
If there is somebody that's authentic, they're not going to get, that's the other thing, like they're talking about Bernie was, screwed out of winning whatever state or whatever.
Iowa caucuses. Yeah. Okay. And then also.
Again, it's just part of this narrative. He's the underdog, you know, it's like, oh, he's getting screwed. Oh, well, that's weird. I bet that means he's real. That means he's really going to change something because the establishment is against him. It's like we're being given a second, like a backup. Everybody knows that Bush and Clinton are frauds. And nobody likes them anymore. So we're being given this like new guard of people who seem a little bit more authentic, but still are backed by the same groups.
Well, I would like to keep with the pace of citing really potentially false sources. And like years and years ago, a guy by the name of Dan Burrish had said that Hillary Clinton used what's called the yellow cube, which is like a looking glass technology, and that she's motivated by the information that she knew, she found out that she was going to be president. And then like later it was said that the yellow cube was being used by like Oprah and all these people to like make choices about stuff. We're going to continue with other crazy information. I mean, Fulford is saying that like Hillary is about to be indicted, and that Bill Clinton has a brain disease that he's going to die in like the next month or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I hope so.
Good times.
That yellow cube thing is interesting, just because of 11/22/63, where the guy.
The yellow card.
Card, yeah. Just a little yellow square or cube.
With an Ouroboros on it, right?
Oh, well, that's in the beginning, yeah.
I think that was the yellow card. Did they actually show the yellow card? Did you guys see it? Because I didn't see it.
Just yet. In his hat. It's like in his hat.
Oh. Okay.
That's a good interpretation. I didn't make that connection that potentially was the yellow card. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that guy? I liked his, just running back to the show real quick, that guy, you shouldn't be here, is like, he's like, what is he? Is he part of Franco's mind or part of the unconscious or something, or a time guard or something?
Yeah.
Like that?
A vessel for the unconscious to talk to him the past voice to talk to him. Yeah. Like a Mr. Smith type thing or Agent Smith where they can like take over in the past, can speak through anybody or certain people.
Yeah. Or he's a time, well, never mind.
Well, he's the Peggy Sue, as Talitha pointed out. I didn't think about that immediately, but yeah.
Oh, he was in Peggy Sue. And he was in There Will Be Blood, as we find out.
Yeah, real quick, I'm just thinking, I mean, the Fool card in the tarot is historically can be thought of as a bum or a wandering bum or vagabond. And of course, it's no number, or in some more modern decks, it's a number zero. And so if he has a yellow card on his hat, it's got an Ouroboros with the number zero, and he's a bum, you know, it seems to me to be, it's kind of an incarnation of the Fool energy, which can be thought of, it can be associated with Doth, which is the 11th, the abyss, or the 11th, Sephirot. And it's the kind of a hidden reality that's reflected by Kether. And so, you know, I mean, this idea of the bum, that the truth, or it can be also this idea of like the nothing, the energy of nothing that created God. That's how I like to think about the card. And so it's sort of this, anyhow, if this character is somehow that reflective nothingness, that's maybe sort of the reflection on the water that they talk about in the Bible.
Interpretation. That's really.
Yeah.
That's true.
And then 11:22, that's the tarot right there. I mean, that is, I see that, I see tarot, period. 11 plus 11 is 22. And a lot of the tarologists divide up the trumps. Like I said, you have 0 to 10 and then 11 to 21. And they represent different aspects of, the outer reality versus the inner reality. There's one division. You know this guy, I wish I could remember his name. He's a Mark Passio.
Yeah, sure.
He's a thinker, but he has this whole idea that a 0 through 10 in the tarot are part of the microcosm, and 11 through 21 represent the macrocosm. I disagree with that. It's not about disagreeing, but I don't resonate as strongly with that interpretation.
He's great.
So in that case, it would be the microcosm, the energy of the microcosm, according to Mark Passio, the Fool would be that Doth energy for that microcosmic tree of life, is what he calls it. To go back to this idea of perception, you know, that if he's going back to 1960 and bringing with him his perceptions, it makes sense that, and just for people that are listening that haven't seen the show, this is right in the beginning, but as soon as he steps through the portal, the first character he sees is this wandering bum who every time he sees him says, "You don't belong here." Or what is it?
You shouldn't be.
I'm a freak. You don't belong here. No, I'm just kidding. That's Radiohead song. But, this idea that it could be his own perception. I mean, that's the first thought you might have, right? If you land in 1960, what the fuck? No, I don't belong here.
I got to throw this in because a minute ago I said, holy shit. And he probably didn't. The reason was I clicked on the guy's, this actor who is the yellow card man. That's how he's credited. His name's Kevin J. O'Connor. And in the Kubrology, Sean Fellow's stuff, he does a lot about, people's midpoints of people's lives. So the person lives and dies, and then the exact middle of their life is like is a important date dealing with that person. Anyway, Stanley Kubrick's midpoint was November 15th, 1963, which is 1 week before Kennedy is killed, which is kind of crazy in itself, right? It's,
oh yeah.
1 week before JFK dies, the exact midpoint of Stanley Kubrick's life.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just clicked on this guy's page and guess when he was born? On Stanley Kubrick's midpoint day.
Wow.
Yellow Card Man. Peggy Sue.
Well, 11/15/63?
Yeah.
Does a yellow card mean in soccer? Does anybody know?
Like a warning?
It's a penalty, basically. If you have a foul, the equivalent of a foul, like in basketball, it's basically their equivalency. So if you commit a foul, you're given a yellow card. And then if you get two yellow cards, you're kicked out of the game. You're given a red card.
Yeah.
Kicked out of the game.
Yeah. Okay.
So the idea of yellow being yield as well, it's not like the full stop. It's a step on the scale,
uh-huh.
Yellow to then red in increasing severity. But that's fascinating, Alex. I mean, that's really, that's a huge, just another one of these pause moments in this conversation. I mean,
yeah, that's,
whoa,
that's crazy. I mean, just the fact that he was born a week before JFK and he's in the show about JFK, but
yeah,
that's also Kubrick's name.
Sorry.
And then he started his career with Peggy Sue, which is a time travel movie. He's in The Master also. So he's in There Will Be Blood and The Master.
Yeah.
Both P.T. Yes. Anderson movies. Kubrick's spectral prodigal son.
Well, the thing about the real quick, that There Will Be Blood character, and I was referencing this in my email, is that he plays an imposter. So it's kind of maybe not time travel as much as just impersonating someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a theme in 11/22/63 as well. He becomes someone else to then change history or change the past. But in There Will Be Blood, he impersonates the lead character's brother. And he kind of runs with this guy for a while and convinces him he's his brother. And then when he finds out by asking him about the past that he can't remember correctly, he kills him.
Yeah.
And,
that was so Paul Thomas Anderson?
Fuck with the past.
That was Blood? PTA? Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
That was a good movie. That was a good movie.
Based on a Sinclair Lewis novel called Oil. He was a famous, you know, early 20th century writer.
Great.
And then his character in The Master, he plays a Scientology, a follower of the, I wish I could remember the name of the movement in The Master, but the movement.
The Cause?
The Cause. So he's a follower of The Cause. He shows up at one of the events, and I think he actually gets beaten by Joaquin Phoenix
because
he starts criticizing the book, and he takes him out and beats the shit out of him.
Yeah.
But so in both of those, he's punished. He's kind of violence is enacted against him in both of those movies. So it'll be interesting to see, you know.
Mm.
What's going to happen to him in this, but also the Fool card, you know, historically it can be about violence too, because, you know, bums are treated poorly. And the dog that's at the feet of the Fool card, some people could claim as a dog that's kind of barking or chasing him away from the community because he's a stranger who stinks and he's kind of being chased away by dogs. Anyhow, it's funny because you mentioned that. I've seen this on Facebook this week too. The Fool card, when you show it in the constellation of Orion. Orion is the Fool, or Orion, sorry. And then you have the belt. But then the Sirius, the dog star, is right there to the left. And then so the Fool, especially the depiction of the Fool in the Rider-Waite tarot deck, it seems to really mirror that constellation. But the plateau in Giza with that 53 where the Khafre pyramid is, that also has the, or belt of Orion right there. So that's another resonance with the Fool card. But I think that's part of the meaning of the Fool, just to go back to that, is, I mean, you have the pyramids are a temple to it. I mean, that's how strong that energy is. It's almost like a vortex in and of itself, that Fool energy.
Noting also real quick that Kevin J. O'Connor, Yellow Card Man, his next credited role is a movie called The Master Cleanse. To the little, all the information, it just says, The Master Cleanse centers on a heartbroken man who attends a spiritual retreat only to discover that the course releases more than everyday toxins and traumatic. So is that what we're going through as a species right now?
That's funny.
Who's in that movie, Alex? Who's directing it? And what are the? Because he's probably not a main actor. He's always just kind of a bit play.
The biggest name I can see is Angelica Houston is in it, who's the famous daughter of John Houston, the director of The Maltese Falcon.
And it's Chinatown, right? He plays the devilish
yep.
father in Chinatown. Yeah. Go ahead.
And long,
storied
career. Possible involvement in the Black Dahlia, but
Real quick, right? Hey, 1947, Black Dahlia.
Oh, yep, yeah, that's the other one. That's creepy.
Well, in 11/22/63, his handler dude Al, his response about the Yellow Card Man is, "Forget about the Yellow Card Man." Like,
yeah.
He says, what is he? Who is he? He goes, it's just a bum. Doesn't he say that? He's just a bum?
That's what he says in the first part. And then, like, he pursues it more, and then he says, forget about the Yellow Card Man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He's just a bum. Yeah.
Can't forget about that guy.
He's a he represents, like, the most powerful, fundamental, creative energy of the universe, and probably the energy that it's allowing you to go through that wormhole. But yeah, just forget about that.
Like Ahab on his mad quest to save the world or to change the past. Yeah, I'm excited to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to have to watch it. It's just too compelling. I think I'm going to have to reactivate my memory. I deleted it as soon as I finished that first episode.
I think during Hulu runs the X-Files too, since it's another Fox thing, you know? And they do these commercial breaks that are all like the same thing. I don't know if you noticed that, because they were running that James Franco car commercial during the 11/22/63. But one of the ones that they were running during X-Files was an ad for the Fox show Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just thought it was funny.
The way Lucifer keeps popping up on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lucifer, I haven't seen the show, but he lives in Los Angeles.
Of course.
Yeah.
And Lucifer Rising is the Kenneth Anger film, the famous Kenneth Anger film. There you go. Maybe that's James Franco. But Uh-huh. Well, I don't want to end this. I mean, I'm down to keep going. I just, if you guys are thinking about, it's been kind of been going for a while. Is there other topics that you really are keen to discuss that you really need to get off your chest or anything you're? I'm not trying to rush us or anything. I just wanted to kind of check in.
Yeah, no. No, I like what we've covered. We've covered a lot. I think Andrew Bashago says that Jeb Bush is going to get the nominee from the Republican Party. I think he said that.
That just seems so insane to me that that's what even be a possibility.
I know.
I mean, there would have to be some wild shenanigans. I think this whole Civil War, let's go back to this we've talked about, but what is it? Avengers Civil War.
Which was trailer during the Super Bowl, apparently. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, this only scenario.
Alex, you sent that, right? I'm like getting confused where I heard things.
Yeah, noting that it was a 42-second ad.
Yeah.
But I mean, that could also be another end game for the whole Trump phenomenon, because he's tapped into this archetypical energy. Let's say there's a killing of the king, the Trump, and then that would ignite some kind of civil war energies too, because he's so popular. I mean, if Jeb Bush were to somehow get that candidacy, there's a massive chunk of like really zealot, you know,
yeah,
people that would just, I mean, what would that do? You know, so I didn't want to say that earlier because I don't want to like manifest anything like that. you know, that would fit surely with a Cliff High Webbot report, I'm sure. He's probably, you know, we're going to see civil war and civil unrest. And, you know, I'm just kidding.
That's funny, the Luke Wilson thing. Luke Wilson will see a car crash, bear witness to a car crash.
I'm doing it every day. I'm bearing witness every day.
We're watching it. It's called the U.S. government. Or U.S. election. Yeah, I don't know if there's anything else.
Hello?
Hi.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. We can call it. I don't have...
I really didn't want to trigger that. I just was thinking, you know, I mean, one thing we didn't talk about was the secret space program stuff that we all watched.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say quickly about that, like, I really appreciated the two that we watched, the Olav, Phil, well, the main one I liked was the Walter Bosley.
Yeah.
My favorite. And just for the listeners, you know, Walter Bosley went through this whole thing about how in the 19th century there was German scientists, American scientists that were creating basically hovercrafts and flying these things all over the country. And they look uncannily like a flying saucer. And so he posits that there was this technology that's really not extraterrestrial at all, but it's a domestic flying technology that then comes to fruition as the craft in 47, as those hovercraft of the saucers.
And of the airship.
I thought that was great.
The airship.
And the airship mysteries of the late 1800s, which is documented by the Del Shau material that I really dig. The Del Shau works, Charles Del Shau.
But the other stuff, I just tend to be in that camp of like the other stuff I either think is a, and I'm open, but I mean, like a psyop, disinformation, like an other, a created other to keep populations in fear. And so I had a harder time with some of the other speakers that were like claiming we've been to Mars. I think it's a hologram, man. I mean, if I had to vote that we're living in some kind, like, I don't even think Mars, anyhow, I think it's Penrose tiling if I had to cast a vote.
And so I'm casting alongside you. I don't think where they're going is what they think that they're going to, but,
yeah. And so anyhow, that was my quick take on that. And yeah, where do you think, what's your best theory? I mean, are they going to like an underground cave that's been painted like an MK Ultra? They said they would take these kids to like a chamber as part of the programming. Is it something that like a consciousness projection hologram, like we were talking about earlier?
Go for it, Alex.
Well, on one side, I'm sympathetic to your guys, to what you guys are saying, that it's a hologram. I think that there's probably a middle ground. I if they do have all that technology that people like Paul Laviolette are claiming quite convincingly is for real, then I think I don't have any trouble believing that they can make a day trip to Mars, you know, or whatever. But then I'm sure that there are also people, and those are probably the people that you see or hear about in the conspiracy world, like Baz Yaga, that were tricked into believing that. And probably, I think, I don't know who it is or where it came from, but there's like a kind of an idea that, like, we're all looking up at the sky. Might have been Catherine Austin Fitz, but that we're all looking up at the sky trying to figure out what's going on when what's really going on is going on underground. And that the idea of these underground bases that they have probably might as well be like going to another planet. And in some cases, maybe they may, you know, have people down there who think they are on another planet.
Yeah, and you know, I shouldn't speak so decisively about what I actually don't fucking know. Kurt, wasn't it Kurt who said it's like a cow looking through the window and trying to get economic information off of the TV running inside? I think I feel like that most of the time, so I don't really fucking know.
Yeah.
But,
For the record, me too. That's why I say if I was forced to cast my vote, I mean, I have no fucking concept of any of it.
I know.
None of us do. We just like to pretend we do. I did think it's interesting that on that round table with the dark journalist, how totally dismissive of the idea that it was a hologram he was. He was like, they're talking about the Phoenix Lights, which is a very interesting case.
Yeah, that was interesting. That discussion was really good.
Yeah, and then he's like, there are people who will say that it was just a hologram, that none of this is real, it's just holograms. And he's just very dismissive of it, to the point where I was thinking, like, are you dismissive of it just because you don't think so, or because that's not something that you want people to think? I don't know, that guy gives me kind of the creeping willies, to be honest.
I'm not familiar with his.
Is he the moderator? Moderator?
Yeah, Daniel List. He has a YouTube channel called Dark Journalist, where he interviews.
I've heard him talked about, but I don't know. Yeah.
One of these guys that came out of nowhere. Now he's the moderator of Secret Space Program and interviewing all these people, and they're good interviews, really good interviews. But it's like he was. His background in journalism or whatever, who the fuck knows? He could be some kind of, the way he's so specifically centered in on the groups of like Farrell, Catherine Fitz, Richard Dolan, the Secret Space Program people, comes out of nowhere, starts interviewing all those people. If I'm being paranoid, you could say that he's there to steer the conversation in certain ways. But then there's the whole fact that the very interesting fact that concert or conference, the weather was severe and that he couldn't even get to the conference.
That was crazy.
That was here. I remember that was in Bastrop, which is about 15 miles east of where I am. And, that Bastrop's been hit with fires and floods a lot the last couple of years.
Yeah, it was very, very strange how that happened on that weekend, and he just couldn't. It makes me glad that we didn't try to go because probably would have been a nightmare.
Now, have you been before, Alex? You said you've been to one before.
Yeah, I went to the one in California.
What year was that?
2014.
Okay.
The year that Henrik Palmgren was the moderator.
Oh shit. Tell us a little. I mean, what was that? Did you get to talk to any, like, one-on-one with Henrik or?
No, I talked to Joseph Farrell for a little bit, very awkwardly, and
sweet.
It was a really awkward time for me. He's a pretty intimidating person, to just talk to, but, I don't know, it was a good experience. Eric and I we're fairly antisocial, so we didn't really get too close to anybody. But we did talk to Joseph Farrell and Walter Bosley. We were talking to Walter Bosley. I didn't even know who he was. I'd never heard of him. He wasn't speaking or anything. He was just there. It was just to be there. But we were talking to him, and so that was kind of cool, just getting to meet him. He's very friendly, genuine, often.
Yeah, he seems very friendly.
And I love his... I don't know if you guys watched the other panel discussion from this year. There's two, which was Walter Bosley, Joseph Farrell, Paul LaViolette, and Jay Widener.
From this year?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, fuck, I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah, you should.
Sorry. What do they give us a teaser? I mean, what?
Well, it's great. I mean, you should listen to it.
I think I've seen it.
Oh, and Jay Dyer also, that guy.
Wait, Jay Widener and Jay Dyer?
Yes. Very confusing.
What was Widener saying, by the way?
Well, Widener was only there because Daniel List couldn't, he was having trouble getting there, so they needed a stand-in moderator, and he was picked. But he really didn't do much. He just took questions from the audience. He's very lazy, actually. I was kind of mad. I was like, God damn it. You have
He opened it up right away, very quickly, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know what to do. But I was just thinking of what an incredible panel he had out there. And I wish I could have. Like, to have Paul LaViolette, Walter Bosley, Joseph Farrell on the same stage. Sorry, Jay Dyer. I like you, but you're not on the same level. That's just an incredible trio. And it's definitely worth listening to. I don't remember very many of the specifics, but there was a weird part where Walter Bosley took a question from the first guy that asked a question, like, I don't know what happened. Like, somebody laughed at his question.
Yeah, there was like an argument in the audience because that guy was like,
he mentioned like UFO abductions or something, and somebody like laughed or snickered, and he was like, what, you gonna laugh? People like you are giving me a bad name, while everybody on stage was like awkwardly sitting there like, what?
Yeah, and Bosley like tries to disarm it.
Yeah, he did very well too. I was very impressed with Walter Bosley in that whole discussion.
I
wish I had better recall. Anything else?
I don't know.
Moving on.
I'm fading.
Give it a say goodbye and maybe do another one sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I'm down, man. I'm down any day of the week, any time. So I feel like you guys are probably a little bit more restricted than me, especially you, Dennis, with the kids. So I'm just always able to work around and just, you know, be sensitive to what your schedules. So.
Well, we will definitely have to get back together to talk about how this show progresses and whatever else.
Yeah, I would love to.
The show 11/22/63 and the show that is Donald Trump and American politics and the prospects of an Andrew Basiago presidency.
Wow, that's great.
Hope for.
And we'll have to get into the prospects of a John McAfee presidency.
Yeah.
As well.
Oh, yeah.
Wasted so much time walking on the wild. go, go. I said I won't let